This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Dashran Johan. The explosion that happened in Beirut recently shook Lebanon and the world. At least 154 people killed, thousands injured, a business district ravaged. An explosion that sparked violent protests and forced a government to resign. Today, we're going to be exploring what went down in Beirut, what caused the explosion, and how has it impacted the socio-political landscape in Lebanon. So to help me unpack everything, I have on Skype James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute. Welcome to the show, James. How are you doing?
It's a pleasure to be with you. All is well. I hope with you too.
Yep, all is well with me too. Okay, first things first, can you tell us what exactly happened in the city of Beirut this past Tuesday?
Essentially, you have a port that is mismanaged, much like the whole country is mismanaged. And one expression of that mismanagement was that you had 2,700 kilograms, tons of a very explosive material. It's basically a material that's used either in explosives in warfare or in explosives, for example, in mining. Not well protected. There's a lot of reporting that there was very close by, if not in the same warehouse, things like fireworks. The government had been warned several times, the latest time only last month, that this was a hazard and a danger. Government did nothing about it. And on Tuesday, the thing exploded, created a mushroom cloud, and devastated the city. It's not just a business district, it's residential districts. You have some 70,000 homes that have been destroyed and 300,000 people who are homeless.
And just so, you know, we set the record straight, because there are certain politicians from other countries, for example, Donald Trump, who has come out and say that what happened in Beirut was a terror attack. Can you clarify what exactly caused the explosion?
It was not it was not an attack. It was an accident waiting to happen. Now, when the explosion occurred, the first thought of a lot of people, including a lot of Lebanese, was that it may have been an attack. Beirut's not a city that's a stranger to attacks. It has had its share of political violence. And clearly, because one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful political force in the country, is Hezbollah, the Lebanese-backed Shiite Muslim militia. There was a lot of finger-pointing, including by Trump, but more for reasons, I think, of political opportunism and trying to exploit the situation rather than that they were saying that on any factual information.
You touched on a little bit earlier on the severity of this explosion, how it has caused a lot of people to be homeless, not just a business district ravaged. You know, a lot of people are injured. Can you sort of dive a little deeper into the damage that was caused because of this explosion?
Well, basically what happened is this is an explosion, the force of which was so powerful that it literally swept across the city. And, you know, for example, the wife of the Dutch ambassador, was who lived not far from the port, was standing in her living room near the window and was very badly wounded and ultimately died. And that's really what happened across the city. Now, the thing that you've got to keep in mind is that Lebanon was bankrupt already before the explosion, and it was dealing with serious political problems and an international community that was not willing to step in for the umpteenth time unless they actually took the heft in their own hands and started to clean up and to reform. And this obviously just magnified the severity of the situation. not only in the city, but in the country.
You said that international communities are not willing to step in. Why is that so?
With other words, it's not that they're not willing. They are willing, but they're not willing unconditionally.
Okay.
So their argument is, and there's reason to that argument, is if we pour billions of dollars again into Lebanon without political reform, then we're pouring it into a black hole.
Yep.
A lot of that money is going to be siphoned off by the same people who are responsible for where Lebanon is today, where Beirut is today. So the issue is not, we're not going to help you, you sort it out. The issue is you've got to create an environment in which foreign aid is viable.
And we will get a little bit deeper into the political repercussions of these explosions. But before that, apart from this explosion, everywhere around the world, we are dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. So what does this explosion mean for the COVID-19 response in Beirut and Lebanon?
It's devastating. Among what was destroyed as a result of the explosion were three hospitals. So with other words, you have a situation where you have 5,000 or 6,000 people wounded in the explosion on top of a pandemic, and you've just lost three hospitals, on top of which, because of the economic crisis, those hospitals were already understaffed and undersupplied. So we'll have to wait and see what the fallout of all of this is, of course. But the danger is that you get a second or whatever number wave of infections that the country's going to have difficulty coping with.
Hmm. On that note, we do need to take a quick break. But when we come back, James and I will discuss the political significance of these explosions. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Dashran Johan, and I'm joined on Skype by James Dorsey, a senior fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute. And we are talking about the recent explosions that took place in Beirut and its political implications. So the explosion also sparked violent protests in Beirut. Who are these protesters and what are they protesting?
Let's take a step back first.
Okay.
You've had a protest movement in Lebanon, which is part of a larger wave of protests that have been sweeping the Arab world starting last year. And Lebanon was one of those. And it started in Lebanon in October.
And what were the protests about?
And those protests were from people across social classes, basically who were fed up with the failure of the political class and the failure of the political system. And they, very much like protesters in Iraq or Algeria or Sudan, they had learned from the 2011 popular Arab revolts. And the thing that they had learned is it's not just enough to have the prime minister or the president resign. You need to actually have removed that political class, replace it, and reform the political system. And that was the demand.
Hmm.
Now, those protests started to fizzle out a little bit earlier this year because of the pandemic. And what the explosion has done is it has once sparked deep-seated anger. And again, it's deep-seated anger of a significant swath of the Lebanese population who are demanding that not only the government resign as it happened now, but that there actually be a totally new faces, people who were not associated with the political system until now, and that they're, the other aspect of this is it's very anti-sectarian.
Mm.
You got to remember that Lebanon is a country that the political system is built essentially on the fact that there are 18 different sects. And it's you call it a confessional democracy, if you wish. With other words, there was a formula under which power was distributed. So the president always had to be a Maronite Christian. The prime minister always had to be a Sunni Muslim. The speaker of the parliament always had to be a Shiite Muslim. And part of what, or one significant part of the protest movement wants to do away with that. And they see themselves as Lebanese, irrespective of what religion or ethnic identity they may also have.
And when you say failure of the political system, what do you mean by this exactly? Are you talking about it from a economic perspective or a human rights perspective, maybe a mixture of both? Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Okay, keep in mind that Lebanon had a devastating civil war from 1975 to 1990. Mm-hmm. When that war ended, the warlords basically became politicians with political parties. And they essentially saw the state, if you wish, as their private turf. And in the middle of that, you got the emergence of Hezbollah, which was a Shiite militia and had great popularity, among other things, because they were the ones, it was certainly perceived that way, that forced Israeli troops out of Lebanon. And so basically the state was, if you wish, gutted from within. It was massive corruption. Billions of dollars were transferred out of the country. And this is a country whose economy is basically a services economy that also relied on tourism and relied on remittances from Lebanese who've done very well outside of the country. And so what you got was at the end of the day last year, a situation where the state was bankrupt. You can no longer go to a bank and freely withdraw whatever money you have there. You had the currency devalue over the last several months by 80%.
Wow.
With massive inflation. So you have a population today, or certainly prior to the explosion, of which 50% were living under the poverty line. That's what I'm saying with the failure of the state. You don't have 24 hours electricity.
Yeah, that is devastating indeed. And you mentioned Hezbollah earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So this explosion that took place has also given birth to some theories. So one of which is that Hezbollah, which, to clarify, is a Lebanese political party, is widely believed to use the port to smuggle and store weapons. So some are suggesting that this political party is the cause of this explosion. Is there some weight to that argument?
First of all, Hezbollah is both a political party, the largest political party in Lebanon,
mm-hmm.
and it's a militia.
Mm.
Don't forget that Hezbollah played a very important role in the fighting in Syria.
Right.
At the behest of the Iranians. Now, I'm not saying they're an Iranian stooge, but they're very close to the Iranians and they're Iranian back. And as a result of Iran, whenever you say Iran, you get all kinds of opinions and emotions that go very deep. I have seen no evidence that, you know, they were smuggling weapons, what have you, through the port. They could very well be. But whether that's true or not, in a sense, doesn't matter. Because fact of the matter is, Hezbollah today is part of the political system and therefore shares responsibility no matter what.
But what exactly is the correlation between a corrupt government and the explosions that took place?
Well, first of all, the way it works is the political parties are basically, they have fiefdoms. And the harbor was one of the fiefdoms and certainly was singled out as a problem where there was massive corruption with customs, with the management. And therefore, that's one reason why you did not have, one reason why you had this explosive material in the port to start with, and you have a port in the middle of the city, which is irresponsible, and there were not no proper safeguards. So, so that's really what we're talking about, and what the protesters want. And it's going to be a very difficult process because, in a sense, they're caught between a rock and a hard place.
Hmm.
So, with other words, they want a total cleanup.
Yes,
they want these people gone.
Hmm.
But you now had the government resign. That means that there's pressure to form a national unity government, but that's not going to be something that's acceptable to the protesters. The prime minister who just resigned has called for early elections. That means that parliament has to pass a new election law, and parliament is the old guard.
Right. Okay. That is something I definitely want to touch on, but let's put that on hold for a second and go back to this protest that's going on, because it doesn't seem, at least from my vantage point when I'm reading the reports, it seems like there is multiple different angles to it. Are all these protests that are going on the ground about the same thing, or are there different groups who are protesting different things? And I ask this because there was also a group of retired military officers who took over the Foreign Ministry building for a number of hours. They hung up red banners and they proclaimed Beirut a disarmed city. So this seemed to be implying a demilitarization. Can you sort of help me clear that up?
I think there's several aspects to this. The majority of the protests are anti-government, anti-system protests. You have had at times pro-government, particularly pro-Hezbollah protesters, and there have been clashes between those two groups. But the overwhelming majority of the protest is against the government and demanding a total overhaul of the political system. Now, the other part of this is that you, for all practical purposes, you have two militaries in Lebanon. You have the regular Lebanese army,
mm-hmm.
and you have Hezbollah.
The militia.
And there is a lot of pressure now that, that basically Hezbollah give up its militia.
Hmm.
And either, they disarm or they're integrated into the Lebanese armed forces, but that, there's no justification to have an armed force that is a law, basically falls without outside of the legal structures and is a law unto itself.
Hmm. Okay, and there are also many reports that suggest that while foreign aid has been streaming in after the explosion, aid from the Lebanese government themselves has been fairly minimal. Why is this so?
Okay, I think there are two things. What's been coming in is humanitarian aid, because you have an emergency.
Hmm.
And a lot of that aid is not going through the government.
Okay.
But it's going through non-governmental organizations, including the Lebanese Red Cross.
Hmm.
The reason for that is that because the government is so corrupt, the international community has said foreign aid, with other words, aid that would be prior to the explosion, would have been designed to help Lebanon get out of its economic crisis, and now would be aid that would help Lebanon rebuild and reconstruct, that will only be available if and when there is a political change.
Mm.
Now, the Lebanese government has, in the cleanup operations since the explosion, has largely been absent. I mean, they've been primarily on the streets to use tear gas and sometimes live ammunition to try and suppress the protests. But the real reason why you haven't seen the Lebanese government leading the cleanup is they just don't have the money. They don't have the wherewithal. It is a totally bankrupt system.
So as you mentioned earlier, these protests pushed Lebanon's cabinet to resign on Monday, acknowledging widespread anger over the government's inaction and mismanagement. Now, first of all, why would a government that is so corrupt, that is so blinded by power, agree to resign in the first place? And also, what is the significance of their resignation?
Well, look, the situation's unsustainable. And it would have been unsustainable. There is no question that this is an explosion that occurred because of the government's mismanagement and the corruption within the system. So with that kind of deep-seated anger against the background that you've had a protest movement for more than half a year already on the streets, there was no way this government could not resign. On top of that, to some degree, it was starting to crumble from within. So you had 5 or 6 members of parliament resign. You had 3 ministers resign, including one crucial one. So it was unsustainable. The problem now is, are you going to be able to create an electoral law that's going to allow new faces to come in?
Yes, and that's what I wanted to ask you. Basically, what happens next? Will there be an election? What sort of reforms or what sort of policies do they need to put in place to at least take the first step towards cleaning up this corrupt system?
Well, the government, the Prime Minister has already said early elections. So, you know, that will ultimately go to Parliament and there'll be a new election law. But what you really need to do is put in the checks and balance. First of all, not have a political system in which power and positions and institutions are divvied up, not according to merit and not according to the vote, but according to sect, if you wish. And you need to put in the proper checks and balances, oversight, supervision, and infrastructure, so that you have a government that is operating transparently and in which wrongdoing can be identified and acted upon.
So that is, of course, going to be a tough road, but do you think that we are going to be taking a step in the right direction?
I think what you're going to see... The short answer is yes. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen overnight. This is going to be a process. But if you look at what's, you know, and again, Lebanon is in a sense the extreme expression of what is happening elsewhere across the Middle East. So these protests, you've seen elsewhere. You saw them in 2011 and in 2019, 2020. You saw that in Algeria, where the president was forced to resign. You've seen it in Iraq, where the prime minister was forced to resign. Lebanon, there's a prime minister that had to resign prior to the explosion. And you had what is until now a successful transition process in Sudan, where mass protests brought the government down. Now, Lebanon is the extreme expression of it because the political class, if you wish, is holding on to power no matter what and, you know, seems to be unable to read the tea leaves. But this has gotten to a point where it is no longer sustainable. Lebanese have nothing more to lose. They are deeply angry. You know, they've lost their livelihoods. They've lost loved ones. They've got nothing more to lose. So you're not going to just simply be able to repress this and go on with business as usual.
And would you say there are parallels that can be drawn between the Black Lives Matter protests in the US and what's going on in Lebanon now. I mean, the American people have been angry for a long time, especially since Trump came into power. But George Floyd's murder seemed to be the straw that broke the camel's back. And same thing in Beirut with the explosions. Are there parallels that can be drawn?
I take it even broader than that. I've been arguing since 2011 that the decade that we just are just ending was a decade of defiance and dissent. So, in other words, you had what was the most dramatic at the beginning of the decade in 2011, which were, you know, the protests in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Yemen, in Libya. But you had Occupy Wall Street. You had fuel price demonstrations in Jakarta. You had mass protests in Chile. And so I think what you're seeing is we're still in that decade. And that decade, in fact, what you're going to see another decade of it, as if you ask me, simply as a result of the total mismanagement in major parts of the world of the pandemic and the economic fallout of it. You know, so we're in the thick of it. And Lebanon is obviously one of the most dramatic cases right now.
So I just have one last question to ask you. Will this mark the birth of a new Lebanon?
I think one has to wait and see. But there's no way that you can return to the status ante quo. So with other words, this is a catalyst. Now, it's not going to be a catalyst for immediate and full, total reform, but it is going to most probably, maybe a torturous path, but it is going to put the country on the road towards change.
All right. Thank you so much, James.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute. And we were talking about the recent explosions that took place in Beirut and its political implications. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out our podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or on Spotify. Once again, I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.